Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge and this is the show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. Now, there's no set schedule. It's just whenever I finish reading a book, I do the review and stick it up here on the podcast feed. So, everything's going well at my end. Holiday is going well. I'm now in the north of Spain. Been going through Basque country and went to Bilbao today, which is pretty good fun. And I'm reading a lot, which is good in some ways because I've got quite a few reviews to catch up on. Bad in another way that I only brought along with me a few books and that at this rate I'm going to run out of books. So hopefully along the way in here in northern Spain I can find some more science fiction novels to read somewhere, from somewhere. Maybe I'll just download and read more of them off the free ebooks and read them on my iPod, but we'll just see how that goes. Or the other thing that I could do is spend less time reading and more time writing, because after sticking out my novel a few weeks ago, last Tuesday, I don't think anyone's read it yet who just started it, and I've not had a lot of feedback, except a few people saying, hey, I'm looking forward to reading it, so that's pretty cool. What I think I'm going to do is actually not continue writing. I'm going to go back to editing my second novel, which is codenamed Monster Story, and I probably get the next edit of that done within a week and probably send it out to readers, because it's difficult to get into writing while I'm on holiday and travelling like this. It's a lot different traveling with two people in a camper van, in a van converted into a camper van, than it is working when I work on when I'm doing my juggling shows and traveling for business. It's a lot different. Otherwise, next bit of news. Oh yes, I did the Sofa Nauts podcast. I mentioned it on the last podcast. I think I might even stick a link to that in this feed, so people might have already downloaded it and listened to it automatically from this podcast. So if not, check it out, sofanauts.com, or type in sofanauts or starshipsofa.com and you'll probably be able to find it, no problem. So check it out. Anyway, let's get on to today's review. It's by A.E. Van Vogt, and the book title is Slan. And it's a very thin book. It only comes in about 154 pages. Now, this book was originally published as four short stories in the Astounding Science Fiction magazine way back in 1940. It's just, like I say, four short stories put together and made into a novel, which sometimes can work, but here, I must admit, the stories don't really gel together very well at all. Let me set up the universe of the book then to begin with. It's set in the future, after maybe 600 years, but then later in the book it said, oh, it's not 600 years in the future, it's actually 1,600 years in the future, because it is a series of four short stories published over 4 months in the same magazine, but they seem to rewrite the history of the first half of the book in the second half of the book, which is a bit weird. I guess I'll get onto that later on in the review. So it's set in an indeterminate time in the future, depending on when you're reading the book. Now, what's happened is that there's this thing called the Slan, and the Slan is like this new kind of variant on humans, and the way that the humans or the Slan come about from humans, that's, again, it's sort of like rehashed, and there's different theories floating around that you read about in the book. But a Slan is, like I say, a variation of humans that have increased strength and stamina. I think they've got two hearts or something like that to give them more stamina and more strength. Also, they have these tendrils on their head which let them be telepathic. So they have the power of telepathy. And they can't only read they can't even communicate telepathically between other Slans. They can also read the thoughts of normal humans, baseline humans. Now, because of all of this, the Slans have been persecuted because sometime in the past they tried to take over for reasons of their own. And so then again, later on, they're sort of like this subclass of people, very highly persecuted. There's rewards. If you kill a Slan and turn it in, there's rewards. And also there's lots of Slans being tracked down by the secret police. Now, the novel opens with this 9-year-old boy called Jommy Cross. And he's traveling, just walking through the city with his mother. And, of course, they're both Slans. You know, him and his mother are both Slans. And they're being tracked down, and then suddenly they're tracked down, and his mother is killed. And then Jommy escapes, and he's left to fend for himself. And because, like I say, there's there's rewards out for killing a Slan or for turning in a Slan, it's quite tricky. But he manages to find a way, or a way finds him to stay out of trouble. And he's left on this mission that he knows that when he's 16, he has to carry something out because his father, when he was younger, when Jommy was younger, his father hypnotized him, so he knows what to do later on in life, but only at the time that it comes. So he's just there as an agent of his father. And his father was actually killed a long time before the story starts, the novel starts as well. So that's one setup, that's one character being set up. Meanwhile, there's another Slan. Her name is Catherine. She's about the same age as Jommy Cross at the beginning of the book, and of course throughout the book as they both grow up. And she's held in this huge tower, and this huge tower is where the I think it was built by the Slans, but now being used by the leaders of humanity. So the main leader, the main dictator of pretty much the whole world, of all humanity, is a guy called Kia Gray. And Kia uses Catherine's telepathic ability to help him in his kind of political machinations. And that's also quite interesting, although Catherine, she's not quite sure why she's being kept alive there. And of course, there's some reasons she's being kept alive in the beginning of the book, but of course, by the end of the book, they're sort of rewriting the motivations of the different characters by the end of the book, which again, I'll get onto later. This opening quarter of the book, this opening short story, I think it moves really nicely, and I really enjoyed it because the death of Jommy's mother is quite horrific, and also Kia Gray's, methods of keeping his, politicians in line, his secretaries in line. It really shows how brutal the world is, and there's a lot of stuff going on there in that first thing. But then it sort of goes into a bit of a holding pattern while Jommy grows up, and, he discovers some secrets, and he discovers some other factions are running things behind the scenes, and these other factions, I might as well just tell you now, turn out to be tendrilless Slan. Now, the thing is about the Slan is that they're really intelligent, and they're this hyper-intelligent, and they're very clever, and they got this telepathy, and they're like I say, they're Superman humans in a way. But then at one point it says that they're only really intelligent because the telepathy is there, and they can learn via telepathic, so they can pick up thoughts from other people, and they can learn really easy, and that's why they're really intelligent. So it's not that they're really intelligent because they're really intelligent, because that's the way that they're made. It's actually because of their learning process. Well, that's what we find out later on in the book. But in the beginning of the book, they're only intelligent because, they are intelligent. So then tendrilless Slan are hyper-intelligent humans, which have all the powers of Slan except that they can't read minds. But then I'm thinking, if they can't read minds, why are they more intelligent than baseline humans? Or are they just humans with an extra heart and that sort of fitter bodies and bodies that heal quicker? I'm not even quite sure of all the different powers of the Slan, but the tendrilless Slan seem to be sort of above normal humans in ways that would require their intelligence and would require the kind of things that would be there because of the telepathy, but then they don't have telepathy. And yeah, it's all this really strange thing. Again, it's like at the beginning of the book by itself would make sense, and the end of the book by itself makes sense, but the rules seem to change as they go through. So anyway, but it seems again like this tendrilless Slan is like another faction invented after the first section of the book was already published, and then the second section it's like, we need this another kind of faction in there. We need to make it a bit more interesting, take it to the next level, and then it seems to be introduced, and it does fit, because with the rest of the book, it seems to clash a little bit with the beginning of the book. Anyway, so what Jommy does, he retrieves his father's knowledge, and he gets his gun, which sort of separates atoms cleanly and without any fuss of, too much radiation or too much big release of energy and stuff like that. But he then escapes from the city into space with a spaceship, or out of space with his rocket ship. And then the book completely seems to lose its way. And, in this single short chapter, Jommy uses this knowledge from his father and invents everything he needs to do to be to have everything that he needs to be... he defends himself completely for the rest of the novel from both humans and the tendrilless Slan. And it's just stupid because you can't... It's just like he goes, and then he invented this, and this. He invents, flying cars. He invents spaceships. He invents a different kind of metal, which is 10-point metal, which is really, 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 really strong metal and can withstand any kind of blow with... And him inside his flying car, he's fine in there. And then... you know, it just goes on from there. And this short chapter, it's only like two pages long, something like that. He discovers, like, he overturns all of science, all of physics up until that point, all of chemistry. Everything gets flipped on its head, and he does all this stuff. And it's like, okay, we see this as just like a little connecting chapter between, like, short story number 2 and 3. And then what happens is that Jommy, he gets old, and then he goes looking for other Slans. And these other Slans, you know, he wants to find other people like him, other Slans like him. And I must admit, he does find some, including Catherine at one point, this other Slan that I mentioned before, because she's growing up too at the same time. And, you know, other stuff happens and blah, blah, blah. And at the end, he finds out some secrets. But the thing is, the last third of the book just drags. And, you know, the science is made up on the spot to get him out of situations. And, you know, any character or any kind of tension that was there, any struggles that he had at the beginning of the book, they seem to be thrown off. And it's just him looking for other Slans. But that's not actually that interesting. And then he's trying to stop a war. But the way he's trying to stop the war is like, you know, again, that's not really explained very well or what's going on there. So that's all a bit weird as well. Because the first half of the book I really like, because it's about growing up and it's about the persecution of minorities. And, you know, this book was written in 1940s, and it seems to directly comment on sort of like the European situation there, maybe the persecution of the Jews and also the dictatorships that were going on there too, you know, and the power it invested in one person. And, you know, but then the second half of the book, it just, like I say, it just goes off, meanders here, there. It just gets all pulpy, really, like, you know, flies off to the moon and off to Mars. And, you know, it's just like, oh, great. And then the ending, you know, there's these two surprises or two, you know, things at the end. One of the surprises I'd already guessed, you know, it didn't make sense for the first half of the book, but I understood, like, the trajectory of the book and where it was going, one of the surprises. And the other surprise was unexpected, but just stupid and didn't really make a whole lot of sense. And of course, like I said before, to create the twist at the end, the last two stories had to rewrite the history and rewrite the rules and rewrite everything from the first two. For example, in the first story, we're told that the head of the secret police, he's bringing in around the world maybe, what, 50, 100 Slans every month or something like that. They're tracking down a lot of Slans and killing a lot of Slans. So you think, okay, Slans, very rare, but, you know, under a lot of persecution there. In the second half of the book, Jommy Cross, as an adult, he's looking for Slans all over the place, and he can't find a single other Slan. I'm thinking, wow, they go from being able to track down 60, 80 Slans a month at the beginning of the book with these stupid humans doing it, and then this superhuman Slan trying to look for the same people later on in the book, he can't find any. Or he managed to find, you know, just a few throughout the whole thing, and that makes it a bit stupid. And like I say, all these other things that were set up, it's like, oh, we have this history. Ah, but that's not what the history is like. It's actually this, and we put in another 1,000 years there, and then we can have a history like this. Oh, and the Slans were created this way. Oh, no, but they're not there then. They're created this way. And, you know, all these things that you just sort of change and flip round and do this and do that. And like I say, it just reads of a, like totally of a book of two halves. First half good, second half is just all over the place. And rewriting the first half to make sense in itself. But it doesn't make sense. You know, the whole world just falls apart. So yeah, story-wise, not very good overall. Although the individual like sections aren't too bad, taken one after the other, I guess. The characters, Jommy Cross himself, he's very bland. You know, there's not a whole lot going on there, especially after the first, you know, third of the book goes past. And he's always like, oh, you know, he's like, he gets into these situations and he can kill people to get out of them, but then he always tries to do it without killing anyone. But he doesn't do it in like this noble way. He does it in this like really kind of whiny, oh, why can't we all just get along? Oh, people should be really nice. But it comes off just pompous, you know, and like really tedious in that kind of way. Another thing that's really tedious is that he's a Superman. You know, he's super intelligent, he's super strong, he's super fit and super everything. And I find super people not that interesting, especially if they haven't earned their superness, if it just gets handed to them in the plate. And Jommy Cross is very, very, very passive. Everything he does comes to him. All the people that he meets comes to him. Even when he's going around looking for people, he's got this plan, he's got this plan, he's doing it. But then when he actually finds his first Slan, that Slan is actually going out, you know, and isn't his fault that he found it. It sort of was just handed to him in his plate. His intelligence is handed to him. His strength is handed to him. His telepathy is just handed to him. The secrets that he comes across is just handed to him. The first way that he gets out of trouble and the way he stays out of trouble aged 9 to 16 is just handed to him on the plate as well. So everything he does, things are just handed to him. And that's very, very boring. Catherine, on the other hand, is slightly more interesting. She, you know, has these real troubles. Again, she's questioning what she's doing alive. Why is she being kept alive? All this different kind of stuff. And she, you know, the things that she does are a little bit more interesting. The, one of the more interesting characters, though, is the Kia Gray. That, like you say, the president, the main dictator, because you know he's a good villain in many ways. Although let me put it this way: at the beginning of the story, his version at the beginning of the story is very good, but later on it loses it. And the minor characters as well, you know, Granny, the woman who talks in third person, she was fun, or at least again early on in the book she's fun. Before she gets changed a lot by Jommy Cross in a way which is less than satisfying. And also there is this love interest going on. I might as well just give this away. Catherine and Jommy are both Slans. The only two Slans in the book. They happen to be opposite members of opposite genders, let me put it that way. And they're the same age. So you're thinking, okay, when they meet, there's obviously going to be some kind of love interest going on here. And guess what? That does happen. And there, it seems to be a bit of a cliche in science fiction that when two telepathic people meet... iTunes is just flashing up here. Yeah, when two telepathic people meet, they instantly fall in love. You know, it's love at first sight. Now, maybe this book is the thing that created the created this kind of science fiction telepathic love story cliche. But either way, it's a little bit too boring, and in this book, certainly not very compelling. I've seen this sort of device much better in other books. Technology. I made a few notes here for technology. Yeah, you get this really kind of pulpy science fiction, you know, very much influenced by... Of course, this is written in 1940, so it's hardly surprising that it's very kind of pulp and not very hard science fiction. So like I said before, you get the rockets, you get the flying cars, you get the space planes, and you get the trips to Mars and the bad technology and science there as well. And, you know, you get the ray gun and you get the sort of, like, atomic energy. Actually, this is the funny thing. There was quite a few, like, twists on science probably at the time, which aren't really explored very much now. I guess they were overexplored and then, you know, debunked by actual science. For example, they have this, like, atomic energy kind of thing. And instead of it just being atomic energy as we know it now, this is written, like, in 1940. There's not been very much controlled fission going on, or even uncontrolled fission in atomic bombs going off. So when they talk about an atomic weapon, it says, oh, it uses perfect atomic energy. Nothing like cyclotrons and no heavy water involved. I'm thinking, wow, this is way before the end of the Second World War. Of course, like written in 1940, so that's a bit strange. His view on atomic energy and what's possible there, and also you got the telepathy angle going on. And but again, it's not telepathy these days. If you read telepathy, it's either completely mystical, which is all right if you like your fantasy kind of stuff, or you get like the telepathy which is technological. Which is something in the brain, something added into the brain, which can make you pick up other people's thoughts. Or there's something, you know, there's some technological reason behind it. Whereas in this book, it's sort of like tendrils, which are the extension of things that humans already have. So there's this like latent telepathy in all humans and the way that we pick up on each other's thoughts and, you know, and the way that crowds gather together, which of course we all know has nothing to do with telepathy, but they seem to have this sort of like, it's this old telepathic, oh, everyone's got, all humans have latent telepathy in them somewhere, that we used to have telepathy back in the caveman days, but now with reading and writing we don't need, and all that kind of stuff, which again is a bit stupid, but I guess it's a sign of the times, 1940. And of course there's the big thing that I didn't mention before, hypnotism. Jommy, with his mind reading abilities and with his father's hypnotist techniques, he's a master hypnotist. And I do have a few issues with this. First of all, of course, hypnotism in the way that's portrayed in this book, it's just like, seriously? You know, it's really, really powerful, and he can just rewrite people's minds at whim to make them follow his instructions. Which again, this is one point I find really bad, because it makes for like really lazy plotting and like easy movement. So if he gets into a situation, he can just sort of like wave his hand and it's like, these are not the droids you are looking for, you know, that kind of thing. But not quite as good as using the Force and sort of altering someone's mind in a cool way. It's sort of like he shows them a crystal and they changes their mind and that's it. And I'm like, really? Okay. You know, he gets out of that plot hole really easy, no problem, just hypnotize the person. And also, of course, he does this sort of like longer lasting mind control of different characters, Granny in particular. And then other characters, he changes them to sort of like, if they meet a Slan, they'll be happy to meet a Slan, even though they don't know it at the time, you know. And he's trying to change people's mind, but not by actually educating them, and not by, you know, showing that Slans are just sort of like, should be equal to humans anyway, and not anything like that. He's changing their minds by literally changing their minds, just showing them the crystal, and their minds are changed. And I think this is really bad. You know, it sort of like violates people's free wills. It corrupts their personalities. And this is the good guy. This is the protagonist. This is the one who we're meant to be rooting for. And he's using these methods, which not more extreme than the bad guys in the book, because the bad guys' methods are very extreme. You know, you read that right at the beginning of the book. Kia Gray is brutal and but quite clever with it at the same time. Whereas Jommy is just like, oh, I'll just change their minds. And he just seems to destroy their identities. But he doesn't want to hurt them. But he's okay about changing their mind, but he doesn't want to hurt them physically or kill them. And it's that kind of weird thing going on there, which I didn't really know what to think of it or how to think of it. Finally, the last bit of weird science that we have in this book is the evolution. Of course, it's this idea that evolution is directed and that nature is aware of itself. And when it comes up with a new kind of mutant kind of thread or mutant strain of humanity or mutant this or that, you know, he just then goes, ah, and then we're going to bring it around and they're going to do this and it's going to replace all the other ones and the old ones are going to die out, they're all going to go infertile and nobody's going to have any kids anymore, but this new breed is going to breed really strongly and let's get through. And the thing is, evolution doesn't work like that. Even back in 1940, we knew that evolution didn't work that way. Evolution is undirected. Things can go backwards as much as it can go forwards. So that's really, you know, it's really just hokey and a bit stupid. And again, it didn't even need to be there because the explanation of the Slans being there at the beginning of the book was adequate and I liked it. But then the explanation that superseded that in the second half of the book wasn't so good either. Moving on, writing style, not that, I mean, it's all right, you know, it's a brisk read, definitely. The first half of the book is definitely better than the second half of the book. It feels a bit rushed at the second half of the book, and the pacing goes all over the place, and the plotting isn't so good either. And also, there's all these things where he gets very concerned with some details and glosses over others, but the things that he's glossing over are quite important. The things that he goes into detail about aren't really there. And also just the writing style as well seems to have dated quite a lot. You know, the bad guys are sitting around and they're talking very much in like 1940s kind of, again, hokey kind of language, but not so much, you know, it just doesn't stand up so well of something that's meant to be set, you know, 1,000 years in the future. The writing style doesn't really hold up very well. And finally, moving on now to the themes of the book. Like I said before, it sort of starts off as this comment on segregation and race and persecution and all that kind of stuff. And there's other themes that are touched on as well. Obviously, pacifism is being written, you know, the Second World War, you know, is just beginning. And things are looking bad, but again, there seems to be sort of like this overblown pacifism by Jommy Cross. It's sort of like, oh, under no account, oh, people are really nice and all that kind of stuff, which is a bit, oh, that's great. But then overall, it just gets so stupid in the second half with the spaceships flying around and this going on and that going on and the motivations being all over the place and the second half of the book rewriting the first half, that I can't really see any themes being explored there seriously, because once you get into just stupidness there, unless it's like stupid in the way of satire and you can really comment and stuff well with satire, if it's just stupid and unbelievable and, you know, silly in these different ways, I can't really, you know, pay attention to the themes. Because of course you get the, oh, racism is bad, you know, mind control, though that's good, you know, being passive, everything, you know, if you just be passive long enough, if you just hang around long enough, solutions will be provided to you, answers will be brought to you, things will happen, and you know, and that's what you really get. And also, another theme seems to be is if you're really, 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 really intelligent, you can fly to the moon in the first ever rocket that you make. And again, it's that kind of stupidness which just makes me think, wow, you know, is it really that intelligence? Is this, I don't know, anyway. So conclusions for this novel, you know, wrapping this up quite quickly, this review, because it is a very short book. This book might have been groundbreaking at the time, but the ideas don't hold up. The themes and the story and the characters and the writing, you know, it all seems very, very, very dated, but not dated in a good way. I mentioned before about evolution and about it's like the like complete lack of the grasp of basic science and evolution. The Time Machine, written, you know, 50 years before this book, well, maybe 40, 45 years before this book, back in, say, 1895, just off the top of my head, maybe 1898, I don't know. But that was written in 1895 language for an 1895 audience, and it was set in 1895 using, you know, the themes and the science, which was new then, you know, and the ideas that they're having about time and space and evolution. Loads of great ideas going on there. And also it explores, like, universal themes like class, structure, and, you know, all these other stuff going on there. It's really good. Now, Slan is set in, you know, 2695, but it uses 1940s language and has like a bad 1940s grasp of science, you know, an evolution of, you know, in particular. And, you know, it just actually, it falls behind, like the science in Slan falls behind what they already knew back in H.G. Wells' times, back in 1895 when he read The Time Machine. So that's how dated it is. Even at the time, it was overly dated, you know. But I guess just, you know, read the two books and you'll see which one stands up. And also, again, here's something I have to say. Books conceived as, like, a serialized, like, as, here's a short story, oh, that one was successful, here's another short story, oh, that one's successful, and now here's another few short stories, and to wrap it up, and I'll put them out together in a novel. Not very satisfying at all. Like I say, you've got to rewrite the beginning of the book in the later books to make it into a book, or it just doesn't hold together very well at the end. There's no, like, there's no main through thread throughout all of this. Like I say, the beginning of this book is very different. But then The Time Machine was also serialized in a newspaper, but that was conceived as a single story, and it had, like overall themes that he wanted to explore, you know, and it had the science behind it, and it was, like I say, first conceived as a story, then serialized, and I have no problem with that at all, as long as it's good, like The Time Machine, and not bad, like, I guess, Hominids, are also conceived as a serialized story, but not done in a very good way, I think. So overall, I'm going to give this book, Slan, 2.5 stars, very average, meaning lots of good stuff in here. Again, I didn't really go into it, a lot of it, except the first half of the book is really good. I really enjoyed it. There's a lot of stuff going on there. But the second half of the book really, really, you know, brings it down, mainly because of the rewriting of the first half and the way that's really, really clunky towards the end. But I do suggest reading this kind of thing as a example of, like, the dated kind of style of Golden Age science fiction back from, like, the 1940s, because it is very dated. But even then, that's actually quite an interesting reason to read it, because, you know, you really see what the style of science fiction is, and you see how much science fiction has moved on since then. And I think it's moved on in many ways for the better, and for that I'm very glad. Although not all books these days have moved on in everything, but, you know, it's good that they have. So that's it, 2.5 stars, A.E. Van Vogt's Slan. The next book I'm going to read is John Scalzi's book Old Man's War. It's his debut novel, came out, I think, back in 2005, and yes, he's really bringing us up into the 21st century in some ways. The thing is, because I'm on holiday, I've already read this book, and I've already finished it all the way through. I finished it this morning, so I'll probably get around to recording that review tomorrow. So check your iTunes feed, because you might be getting two podcasts at the same time. We'll see how that goes. So, yes, I hope you've enjoyed this review. It's been a shorter episode this time around, I guess. Email me if you've got anything to say, or if you've got any great other good, like, better examples of 1940s science fiction that I should be reading, other sort of Golden Age stuff there that you think I'd enjoy, because I did enjoy it quite a lot. But very, very dated, this book. Anyway, so email me, luke@juggler.net. Also, if you want to keep track of what I'm doing on my travels at the moment, going around the north of Spain, I'm putting up videos, I'm putting up photos and stuff like that. So follow me on my blog, which is lukeburridge.com/blog. Or just go to lukeburridge.com, there's links there. And also there's links there that you can follow me on Twitter, which I'm keeping up to date with as well, so people can follow me on there. And the same messages there go through onto my Facebook page. But that's only for friends, close friends and family and stuff like that. So yes, follow me on Twitter, follow me on my blog. It's @lukeburridge and lukeburridge.com in those things. So yeah, hope you enjoy this review, and I'll catch you next time.